sangka murid dan wali. Faith. Today we were talking about improving the world. Making the world a more peaceful place, less violent. And we talked in particular about spreading the idea of raising children with a prejudice-free consciousness. Because less prejudice means less hate means less violence. The idea was that you can't change the world overnight, but you can change the world over many generations. And each generation has a chance to program a new generation in a new way. Subconscious mind is programmable. Put the right beliefs into a new generation, do it again and again, and over a period of a few generations, that's how you can change the world in a significant way. And for the monks, our role in this process is mainly one of propagating this through our teachings, through publications, lectures, and personal discussions. So that's what we were talking about on stage. So this approach to improving the world, of course, is one that involves outer action, an external approach. So I thought, turn the coin over, put the other side of the coin, so on the other side of the coin to an external approach, of course, would be an internal approach, right? So, idea here is focusing on how those in the monastery can improve the world without any outer actions, but simply by achieving and sustaining a spiritual consciousness. So, fortunately, our computers these days have a great search capability. All I have to do is kind of remember a phrase and type it in and find what Gurudeva said on it. So. First one, let's see if I can find the phrase I remember. I remember it toward the end. The phrase I was looking up was the monastic communities of worldwide of all religions that sustain sanity on this planet, at this time of the Kali Yuga. The monasteries are helping the planet remain sane. So, that's the end. So the quote's a little long. It talks about sannyas, but I thought that'd be nice to read too. So this is Sarvadharma Shastras, chapter 12. At times the renunciate sadhana is austere, as he burns layer after layer of dross through severe tapas. Wears a saffron robe, studies the ancient ways and scriptures, chants the sacred mantras. He reflects constantly on the Absolute. He lives from moment to moment, day to day. He is always available, present, open. He has neither likes nor dislikes, but clear perceptions. Having stepped out of his ego shell, the sannyasin is a free soul. Nothing binds him. Nothing claims him. Nothing involves him. Without exclusive territory, without limiting relationships, he is free to be himself totally. He has problems within himself, he keeps them silently within and works them out there. He speaks, it is only to say what is true, kind, helpful, or necessary. He never argues, debates, complains. His words and his life always affirm, never negate. Finds points of agreement, forsaking contention and difference. No man is his enemy. No man is his friend. All men are his teachers. Some teach him what to do, others teach him what not to do. There's no one to rely upon except God, God's guru, and the power within his own spine. He is strong yet gentle. He is aloof yet present. He is enlightened yet ordinary. He speaks wisely of the Vedic scriptures and ancient shastras and lives them in his own example. Yet he consciously remains inconspicuous and transparent. He is a man on the path of enlightenment who has arrived at a certain sub-superconscious, intuitive, state and wishes to stay there. Therefore, he automatically has released various interactions with the world, physically and emotionally, and remains poised in the contemplative monastic lifestyle. The basic thought behind the philosophy of being a sannyasin is to put oneself in a hothouse condition of self-imposed discipline, where unfoldment of the spirit can be catalyzed at a greater intensity than in family life, where the exterior concerns and overt responsibilities of the world predominate. Sannyasin is a homeless one who remains detached from all forms of involvement, friends, family, personal ambition, finding security in his own being, rather than attaching himself to outward manifestations of security, warmth, and companionship. He is alone, but never lonely. He lives as though on the eve of his departure, often abiding no more than 3 nights in the same place. He may be a pilgrim, a wandering sadhu. He may be a monastic contemplative living in a cloistered monastery or semi-cloistered ashrama. Preparation for sannyasa, the aspirant leaves behind family, former friends, and old acquaintances, steps out into a new pattern of sub-superconscious living, strives to be all spine power, all life. When we see him trying, although he may not be too successful at it, if he is going through some inner turmoil or challenge, we know he is striving. And that is an inspiration to us. His very existence is his mission in life. He has dedicated himself to live a life of total commitment to the path of yoga, and by doing so sustains the spiritual vibration for the householders. It is the renunciate who keeps the Vedic religions alive on the earth, who keeps the philosophy vibrant and lucid, presenting it dynamically to the household. Now we get to the point of this starting with. Monks of every Hindu order are guided and guarded by unseen beings who look after their lives as if they were their own. Families are blessed who share in and support the renunciation of their sons born through them to perform a greater dharma than the grihastha life could ever offer. It is the monastic communities worldwide of all religions that sustain sanity on this planet. It is the monks living up to their vows who sustain the vibration of law and order in the communities and nations of the world. This is how the Devonic world sees each monastic community worldwide. This is how it is and should always be. That's a good day for this. This is how it is. This is how it is and should always be. This is how humanity balances out its experiential karmas and avoids destroying itself as it passes through the darkness of the Kali Yuga. Monastic communities that surround the planet, fulfilling their dharma, compensate for the adharma that is so prevalent, thus ensuring that humanity does not self-destruct in these trying times. We must, for the sake of clarity, state here that monastic communities are either strictly male or strictly female. Co-ed mixed group ashramas are not monastic communities, but classed traditionally as communes. Okay, I never got that off his chest. Okay. So that's the first one. So that's an interesting quote, you know, how assuring that humanity does not self-destruct in these dying times. So it shows the importance of monastics. Of monasteries of all religions, basically they were saying, monasteries of all religions help in this way and keep the consciousness lifted up during this time. So that's Saiva Dharma Shastras. Next we have the Saivite Shastras. A couple of quotes here. The world being in a state of flux due to the continuing adjustment because of the slight overlapping of the vibrations of the Kali Yuga into the Satsiva Yuga causes the general unrest through every living thing. The world being in a state of flux due to the continuing adjustment because of the slight overlapping of the vibrations of the Kali Yuga into the Satsiva Yuga causes the general unrest to every living thing. The monastics of the Sarvasiddhanta Yoga order must compensate for this unrest by personal conduct. Hence, rules and general direction of conduct and care of personal property will be clearly outlined in the first part of the Shastra. This is the first verse in the spirit of it. We shall now take a close look at the Sarvasiddhanta Yoga order in the year 1995. And in doing so, we will begin to see the course we are on. So the idea there is, when were they written? 73. So they gave us 22 years to figure it all out. Get it right. So they looked 22 years in the future and said, okay, after you've fumbled along and figured it out for 22 years, this is how things will be functioning. Which happens to be a 12-year cycle back, one 12-year cycle in the time. Each Matavasi served together transparently in wisdom. Each one was treated as an individual soul, and a sense of sameness pervaded through all of the Saivite monasteries. There was a great feeling of, there is nothing happening here. Our son was strong and fulfilled its purpose. Families began to send their sons to the monastery well-trained, as well as assume their position in training young men of other families. The daughters were kept virgins until marriage, as were their sons, and a new Saivite culture began to bloom surrounding each monastery as the darshan more and more fulfilled its purpose of stabilizing the intensity of Saivism in the minds of the families and surrounding communities. Even other religions, such as Buddhism, began to flourish in the darshan radiations from the Saivite monasteries. That's how I found the quote, Buddhism. The only use of the word Buddhism in the whole Saivite Shastra. Even other religions, such as Buddhism, began to flourish in the darshan radiations from the Saivite monasteries. A great harmony was felt by all, under and guided under the systematic dissemination of encouragement and discipline through the Guru Secretary and two helpers and the senior group of each monastery. That's an important principle in the Shastras, dissemination of encouragement and discipline. In other words, there's a tendency for communications in the monastery and in the family too to always be the correction one. Talk to your children when they need to be corrected. You send notes to monks when they need to be corrected. If they aren't doing something the way you want them to do. So that's the idea of discipline. But you're supposed to balance that out by the dissemination of encouragement or praise when there's no need to praise, but just because they're doing well. So you praise when things are going well, and you discipline when behavior needs to be changed, and that's the balance. Saivism, coming into the Satsiva Yuga, began to flourish in an overpowering, quiet, joyous, and a happy way. Its force worked from inside out. It did not move the emotion. It was seen to move the life force of man. Early in the order's history, the darshan came strong and almost disappeared at times. But later, as each individual adjusted himself to the Shastric flow, the darshan became constant, strong, and steady. Only when the physical plane permeates orderliness and does not precipitate confusion can the darshan flow in this extreme continuity. Therefore, in the next chapter, it will be clearly outlined the way these Saivite monastics live within their monastery. Comment from me. So the idea we can see from the Saivite Shastra's quote, the that a well-functioning Saivite monastery stabilizes Saivism in the minds of the family. So this isn't limited to those who physically live near the monastery. If everyone who lived near the monastery was in this way, we'd have the whole street would be converted by now. So it's not a physical proximity that you're talking about, it's a mental proximity. The mind is attuned to the monastery, the mind thinks about the monastery, draws on the monastery. So those who think about it often and draw or pull on it for spiritual strength, that's what is stabilized by the monastery. The monastery helps them be strong in facing difficult challenges in their lives, as well as helps them be more stable in consciousness and therefore more consistent in their daily sadhana. Those who draw on Kwai Adinam in this way, I would say number in the thousands. Thousands of people around the world draw on the Adinam. A lot of it works through the internet. We have a talk them and people all over the world to go and you meet them, and the first time you've met them, and they say, every morning, first thing when I get up, I go to talk. You know? Say, oh, that's wonderful. You know, that's how they keep mentally attuned. They see it on the web. And they attune. So we have thousands of people around the world in that way, depending on the monastery, to provide them with stability, spiritual stability. So one more quote, and I found this one by the word mir. The word mir. So this gives the whole spirit of it. The idea is, well, let me read it, and then I'll explain. The mere existence of a Saivite guru is enough to fulfill his mission on the earth, as is the mere existence of the Saiva Siddhanta Yoga order enough to fulfill the purpose of the order. Anything done outside of the emanation of darshan, that is of the nature of grace. So, as I say, this is the other side of the coin from last day. Last day we're looking at how we can improve the world through our external action. Specifically, how we can help reduce prejudice in the world. And the more we can help reduce prejudice, violence will go down as a result. The two are related. So that's the external action. This is just the internal spiritual vibration. So, as it says, the mere existence is enough. So, shows that it's very important just having a monastery with a strong spiritual vibration is an important way we influence the world. It's not as visible. You don't see it unless you talk to people and start to realize how much they depend upon the monastery to hold a certain vibration.